You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to the Chris Spangle Show. I am your host, Chris Spangle, and this is a podcast about life in the arts. I work for a nationally syndicated radio show. By day and by night, I'm building out a podcast platform, and my co-host is Emily Sweet.
Hi, guys.
Emily is the, she is a full-time actress, very soon to be a full-time actress.
Ew.
Yeah, so today we're going to do something a little bit different. Normally, I interview people, and Emily is going to interview me. I had so much fun with you last time you were on.
I did, too.
Like, the second it was over, I was like, hey, do you want to, like, do this all the time?
Oh, my God, and I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you even have to ask?
Yeah. Well, I do, but...
I guess.
Otherwise, it'd be creepy if you just showed up every Sunday and you were like, hey, can I be on your podcast?
Right, peeping through your window, Chris?
You would get away with it. It's fine. Today you're going to ask me a bunch of questions and we're just going to have a conversation about whatever.
Yes.
Whatever. You've been very nervous about this.
I have been because I've never really interviewed someone before. And I mean, I know you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't want to ask you questions that I already know.
Right.
Right. And, you know, I want to ask questions pertaining to the podcast. And I'm a little nervous, but we'll see how it goes.
You'll be fine.
Thank you. <Yeah. laughs>
So go ahead. Let's get started.
Okay. So the last time I was on your show, we had talked about getting into acting, you know, and mm-hmm. for myself, you know, and what that takes and all of that. And one thing that I don't think we really talked too much about was when you make that leap to try to do it full time.
Sure.
And so you work for a great radio station, you
right.
know, it's what you said you wanted to do since what, eight?
8 years old. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I think that's
yeah.
so cool. And so, I mean, what is that? I guess, are you, how do I want to word this? Do you see yourself there? Do you have bigger aspirations? Like
sure.
what do you think would make you ever leave? And like, what do you want? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. I love where I work and I love the job that I have. And it's obviously something that allows me to do stuff like this. But I think, you know, there's always a time limit on any job, and I don't have a time frame necessarily, but I think it you look at it and you go, okay, the reality of it is at some point your skill set, you've got to push the limits. And We Are Libertarians is growing to the point where it may get to a point where I have to do it full time, where it demands so much of my attention and is making enough money that if I want it to grow into a business, then I've got to do it full time. And, you know, supplement on the side with some consulting work. So I have no issues with, you know, what I do, but at the same time, you never know what the future holds. So
right.
The prospect of being self-employed and going out on my own and doing my own stuff is kind of like, I don't know.
Nerve-wracking.
I don't know if I can do that. I mean, you're probably better suited to talk about this. I mean, it's definitely something that I want to do. My aspiration is to, I love helping people make their dreams come true. I love helping mm-hmm. people with the creative process.
Right.
And I love what I do with We Are Libertarians, and I would love at some point in my life to wake up every morning and do that full time. You know, it's not a job to me, it's a passion, and mm-hmm. if I can just pay my bills with it, then that would be great.
Yeah.
So, and you know that, you just are, so can you talk about how, I'm going to turn the interview around on you already.
No.
You're leaving your job to be a full-time actress?
Yes, I am. So I've had this job. I moved here 3 years ago. It's the first job I had working with this family, working for the two surgeons. And, you know, they always say if you have a backup plan, you'll probably always do your backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true to a certain point. I think you need to be smart and be able to pay your bills and,
right.
you know, make sure that you can take care of yourself. But then there is that point where, you know, you just have to say to yourself, okay, I'm going to make that leap. And
yeah.
if it doesn't work, well, it will work, right?
Yeah.
You know, you would say, well, if it doesn't work, I can always go back. But then you usually will always go back.
Yeah.
It's always going to be hard. It's going to get hard. But yeah, I took that leap when, you know, I did this TV show and I said to myself, well, because at that point it had been picked up, you know, for a full season. It was just the pilot. And that's terrifying to like
yeah.
leave your job where you make decent money. You've been there, you're familiar with it. to then go film a TV show that might not be picked up. Yeah. Thank goodness it did, right? For two seasons, which is awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, so you are confident in your decision at this point that leaving your job is the right thing to do.
I would never second guess it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Because I know that it's been picked up for two seasons and that helps, but also because I know that if I didn't leave and pursue acting, I never would. Like, time is ticking, especially in that industry, age-wise.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, okay, it's now or never. And so, no, you know, I put in 3 good years there. I love that family. They're great. You know, they've helped me out so much and been so supportive, but you just kind of get that itch where every night you're like, I got to do something different. I have to do something different. And that I was itching away.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate in that, like, my day job and my hobby, my desire are the same thing. You know, it's not like we're full-time acting versus, you know, I don't know if you want to mention what you did, but it was two different industries. And so, you know, I'm fortunate in that I'm learning a skill set by day that I can apply by night, you know, so I'm fortunate in that, you know, where I am able to, I love podcasting. I love digital media. I love what I do.
What do you love about podcasting so much?
For me, podcasting is the human experience has, since the dawn of time, been told through storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Conversations between two or more people where a story is being told. And that is how the brain accepts information, through that audible transfer of information. You know, and TV and video are great because you have that extra sensory perception. But podcasting to me is much more intimate.
Uh-huh.
You know, where it's a lower barrier to entry too. Like, you have to be to get your emotions across in your business. You have to be far more skilled than I am at podcasting. You know what I mean? You have to be very expressive, and it's much more expensive to tell a story in a really good way. Whereas this, we're sitting here with $500 worth of equipment and we're able to do hundreds of hours of storytelling. And that's fundamentally what we do at We Are Libertarians. It is telling stories through conversation and giving people information about not only libertarianism, but also the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this show is about what it's like to experience a creative lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know, what is it like for Emily Sweet to go do a photo shoot all day and then write a script at night, mm-hmm. for instance? Or for me, what does it take to build a platform that entertains people, that informs people? And so podcasting is an incredibly intimate act, and it is where, you know, for what we've done, it's a group of people who hang out socially. It's our friend circle, and so we're allowing people in on our conversations,
right?
In on that, and it's just I think it is, since I heard about what I've been a huge radio fan forever, but as soon as I heard about podcasting in 2005, I was like, I want to do this.
Uh-huh.
And so it took about 5 to 6 years for me to finally do a podcast.
Why so long?
In 2005, well, frankly, Emily, I was a loser.
Oh,
in my early 20s.
No.
Oh, I was a loser. I was living in my mom's basement. I'd been fired from my job. I had dropped out of school. I was working part-time for my dad as a janitor. I couldn't get a date. It was just a disaster. I was making very little money. So, and I had nothing to talk about.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, I could have started a podcast, but it wouldn't have been interesting. I didn't have anything to talk about.
Right.
And once I went and, one of the big reasons that I left WXNT, which was the first radio station, I worked there for 4 years.
Okay.
And one of the reasons that I left WXNT is that I wanted to do talk radio. But I recognized that as a person under the age of 30 with all I had experience-wise was radio skills.
Okay.
I knew that I needed to go do something political so I could then build a knowledge base to talk about it.
Okay.
Okay.
Why politics?
It's what I was always interested
in. Okay.
When I was in the sixth grade field trip to Washington, D.C., I was standing on the Lincoln Memorial around 5 p.m. and just thinking how beautiful it was, looking at the city of Washington, D.C. Uh-huh. I had a very romantic notion of politics, and I was just like, this is what I want to get into.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I remember the 1998 when Bill Clinton was being impeached, listening, I skipped a movie. I sat in the car while my mom, dad, and brother.
Oh my gosh, do you remember what movie it was?
I don't remember what movie it was, but I remember sitting in the car going, I'm not going in. I'm just sit here in the car and listen to the impeachment.
Oh, how
song.
Funny is yeah. that? And a kid like your age was like, nah, I'm going to skip the movie. I'm just going to hang out here in the yeah. car and listen to this impeachment. Oh, hilarious. I love it.
I believe the word you're looking for is nerd.
No, no, no. I mean, maybe. No, I'm just kidding.
It's okay. Nerds rule the world now.
Yes.
So I knew I had to go do something that would give me a foundation to learn more about politics, the philosophy of politics, and I was a libertarian. So it was a natural jump to go work there for 4 years, but my goal was always, you know, I did podcasting for the Libertarian Party, and so that's when I bought some equipment. I actually took out a loan, an equity loan on my car. They offered me an extra $1,500 on my loan.
I'll take it.
Yeah, which is still a bad decision I'm paying for, but...
But look at all your podcasts you have from it.
I know, yeah. It's given me a friend circle, a career, a passion, yeah. you know what I mean? So...
Worth it.
I just have always been interested in the new medium, you mm-hmm. know, and working by day in a broadcasting situation and by night working in a very narrow niche, you know, where it's thousands of people that listen instead of millions.
Right.
Gives me a really unique perspective that's really interesting.
Okay. So do you think that podcasting's ever going to die off? I mean, like, there's still newspapers, you know,
right.
but there's no more really VHS. There's, you know, in my car, there's not even a CD player in my car anymore.
Right.
It's like all Bluetooth. Like, do you think that eventually podcasting's going to be like, well, that was fun while it lasted?
No, I think not in our lifetime, but audio entertainment will always be there.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, the format in which it is delivered will may change.
Okay.
But the concept of one person speaking into a microphone and it being distributed to thousands of people will always exist in some form.
Yeah.
So it may not be on an RSS feed. It may be, you know, broadcast again over the air or mm-hmm. on a satellite or whatever, but that skill of telling a story or having a conversation or interviewing somebody or collecting a group of people like we've collected and giving people a peek behind the curtain, that is the skill that will live.
Right. Okay.
You know, the technology mm-hmm. is secondary.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. That's a good point there. Cool. So then you, a little bit back, you had said that, give me 1 second here. Of course, now it's left my brain. Go figure. It's not the blonde, I promise. you said that you have like a really good listener base. You know, you've mm-hmm. managed to come across, you know, 6,000 listeners,
yeah,
maybe,
we have
something like
6,000 unique listeners a month at this point.
So that's pretty great. How do you narrow it down? I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's turnover and all that, but is it really just because you talk about whatever you want, like interesting stories? I mean, or mm-hmm. is there like a formula you follow to be like, oh, if we follow this, we'll get more followers, listeners?
Yes. We are in a niche, the libertarian political world, and that is the way we bring people in. But we are really the only entertainment brand for libertarians. We focus on comedy first and information in second.
Okay.
And that's sort of been, that was not always the case. But when we really decided to, in last year especially, to say whatever we think without worrying about the consequences. So saying what we believe without a filter.
Uh-huh.
Because we don't have to have a filter.
We don't
have to say, well, is this socially appropriate or not?
Right.
Because honestly, if you look at entertainment these days and you look at the president, the less socially appropriate you are, the bigger the audience you'll get. Because, you know, I was having this conversation today. Greg, my co-host, struggles with the Libertarian Party and its effectiveness. And he's like, listen, I don't think it's an effective venue for political action.
Okay.
And I say, I understand that, but you have to also understand the base of our people are Libertarian Party people. But I can't tell you that you shouldn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's that conflict is going to be more interesting than if you just went along to get along.
Right.
You know, so I've learned from my mentors, you know, the people that I've worked for over the years. And I've noticed that conflict is a huge part of it. And not like negative conflict, mm-hmm. but just you can't agree all the time.
Yeah.
You know? And so when I built this show 5 years ago, I wanted to find people that had differing opinions. I wanted somebody like Maya, who was uber anarchist, to disagree with somebody like Greg, who is a constitutional Republican.
Uh-huh.
You know, and as we've branched out into other other venues like this, something like where we're talking, you know, there's less conflict. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think you and I will ever really argue.
No.
But the conflict comes in the situations that we face.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the struggles that you're going through, and how did you overcome that? You know, that is the conflict. And so that is the foundation of entertainment. The other foundation of this is humor, is that people want to laugh. I've boiled it down, like, the internet and entertainment these days, basically people go online to find entertainment for two things. They want to come and they want to laugh. Okay? So I'm not the type of person that I can go on a website and people will come. So I am going to have to stick to laughing.
You don't even know how to respond to that, Chris.
You don't need to. It's okay. But
I'm going
to
sip my wine.
Yeah. So, like, we want to make people laugh, and we want people to... The foundation of comedy is you build characters and people interact off of those characters. You know, something like calling Jeremiah the boss hog of liberty, and like, here's a guy who's on the parks board. He's a real life Ron Swanson. He ran 4-H forever. He's like uber connected in this rural county, and we joke about him running the county and that he's built a statue to himself, and like, of course it's all, you know, yeah. over the top. Like, my character is Dear Leader, and I'm a crazed dictator who, it's mandatory liberty.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, it's that kind of stuff where you find those hooks that people can get into the show.
Right.
Now, that can also alienate people, because somebody who's listening for the first time doesn't get those inside jokes.
Yeah.
And so that's why you have to refresh all the time, okay. which is another skill that I've learned from my mentors.
So you don't think your you know, hardcore listeners hearing the same thing 15 times throughout 35 broadcasts or whatever, that they're okay with that, and why? Because you have other stuff
right.
so often that it doesn't really matter?
Yeah, so novelty is a huge part of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Novelty is a huge part of entertainment. You've got to have something where, you know, if you watch a comedy, the reason that you laugh at a stand-up comedian is they've connected two different things that you didn't think went together, and then they've made it go together.
Mm-hmm.
You watch a movie, and you're watching a story, and there's a plot twist. Well, that's novelty. And so you want novelty, but you want an unpredictability of what you're going to say. I think if you got on every episode and you said the exact same thing, it would get boring.
Right.
But taking those running jokes and adapting new thoughts or new phrases, or taking something like, you know, taking Make America Great Again and applying it to the Boss Hog of Liberty equals a new joke.
Yeah.
You know, so whatever that may be. So that's like basic comedy writing, that triangle. And people don't seem to get bored with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we don't try to beat the same dead horse.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We try to give people, you know, we have the big show, but these other shows that we do are extensions of that, of the characters that come off of that show, and that's how we get people to go listen to those shows. Like somebody like Miranda. Miranda is a libertarian, but there's nothing inherently libertarian about Miranda's world. It's her telling her crazy stripper
yes,
stories.
Right.
But to me, the benefit of Miranda's world, it's not the shock value, it's that Miranda is somebody who is living a libertarian lifestyle. She treats people the way that she wants to be treated. She is, she's going to give you exactly what you give her, be it good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also somebody who has built a life from, like, you and I had parents.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but you seem you had parents.
Two wonderful parents. Mom and Dad, I love you.
Right. She did not.
Right, yeah.
Miranda is a feral human being.
Yes.
And so,
oh, God, love her.
No, she's the best. We hung out with her last night and had so much fun doing her podcast yesterday.
Yes.
But she, you know, she's kind of the model. I mean, here's somebody who doesn't have social expectations. Maya is another person. they don't care about what society says. They care about how interdependent relationships, like, to me, they're a look at how libertarian society works, both good and bad. Uh-huh. Like, so I take it that deep. Before I would even start a show or invest my time in somebody and help them craft what they're doing, there has to be some sort of main driver back to the libertarian ideal.
Okay.
So there's always a, everything is calculated. Like, we joke about how loose it is, but I'm very calculating about what we put out, how we put out, who I ask. You know, like somebody like you, like, I don't know if you're a libertarian or not. I don't care. But the specific goal of this particular podcast is the process of making all this stuff. And you're an intelligent person with a, with a career that is going to go nowhere but up. And
thank you.
Yes. And
yes, let's put that energy out there, right? Yeah. For my career. Yeah.
You're also a delightful person that people want to be around. And so
thank you.
You have to take that and you go, okay, if I can't stand being around Emily, then why would I ever want to put her on a podcast?
But see,
you know what I mean?
But okay, here's the thing. I'm not even going to go there. Well, okay, I'll go there. I can't stand Donald Trump, but like people right. love him. Like, right. so you know what I mean? So like, you might think I'm the most annoying human being in the world, but don't, even if I was and people were like, oh my God, that Emily bitch, like we loved her.
Right.
Like, would you keep me on? Yeah. Like, how do you,
I want people to have a feeling about you.
Uh-huh.
People hate Miranda or love Miranda. I don't want any
Miranda. I love you.
I do too. I don't want an in-between feeling.
Yeah.
I want people to have an emotion. And that is part of the Donald Trump effect, is that Donald Trump, it doesn't matter whether you love or hate him. It matters that to him, whether or not you think about him.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Right.
And so
right.
when you're trying to build an audience, what I always say to our hosts is, I want you to be you. I want you to say exactly what you want to say, because at the end of the day, somebody out there will feel exactly the same way you do, love your humor, and that is how you build an audience.
Uh-huh.
If you try to fake it and be something you're not, then everybody can tell.
Yeah.
You know, and so over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, I've personally just said, you know what, I'm just going to be me. And I'm going to deal with the fallout of having confidence in myself and being who I am. And
but that way you'll lose people, but then you'll gain so much
exactly
more.
Exactly right. Yeah. Because the first 32 years of my life where I tried to be something I wasn't or tried to adapt myself to every person, that was a miserable prison to live in.
That's exhausting.
It's exhausting to play that role. And you know what? It's less exhausting to say, hey, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings by saying that thing. Well, I don't forgive you. Okay, well, I'll find a new friend who won't get so butthurt
yes.
about.
You know, oh my gosh, that it is just so liberating, because my entire life, you know, and I think my mom blames herself, because my mom, oh my God, she's the sweetest woman in the whole wide world. She truly, truly is. I know everyone loves their moms, but my mom is just amazing, right?
Not everybody.
Well, I guess that's true. That is true. So then she kind of raised me, you know, like, people please, be nice, be very respectful, you know, oh, Emily, you're an able body. You might not want to do that, but you should go do that.
Right.
And then so, you know, my whole life I was just like, the thing would come and I'd be like, I don't want to do this. Like, you know, just people pleasing. And then I remember 2016, New Year's Eve, like I never make New Year's resolutions ever because right. I never stick to them, right? But I told myself, I am going to put me first for once and say no to people. And if I don't want to do something, I'm not going to do it. And it is so liberating. It just feels so great to be like, sorry, I don't want to.
Yeah.
Why? I don't need a reason. I just don't want to, right. You know, and it's so nice and to still be nice, of course, but yikes.
Because then you're like, I don't want to go. Well, why not? I got a family thing. And then like, you can't post on social media that night.
Yes.
You
know, like, it's exhausting. Yes. Oh my God. I know.
Yeah. So how did you deal with the fallout of people who were unhappy with your new decision when you, because in my life, going from a codependent person who people pleased to somebody who has who put other people and relationships first, to now someone who is putting their career first and their hobbies first and the immediate people around them first. But I come first, mm-hmm. you know, and I've never lived that way. And so the people who have known me for years, some of them find that distasteful. And, right. they feel it's their job to take it down a peg.
Yeah.
How did you deal with that? I mean, did you experience that?
I did, and it hurts because, you know, it's not like I want everyone to like me, because, oh well, if you do, you know, you can't make everyone happy, you know. Right. Me wearing this, I did have a photo shoot, but if I went out with this bright purple lipstick on, right, I'm sure a lot of people would look at me and be like, who the F does that girl think she is, you right know? So, like, you're not going to please anyone anyway, but, you know, I would prefer people had a good opinion of me, okay?
Sure.
So when I finally started being like, God, you know what? No, I'm not going to do that. Or no, you know, I'm sorry. I really am just, I'm too tired tonight. Like, I'm not going to do it. They would get mad, and, you know, and then I lost some friends and, you know, whatever. But you just realize, well, I'm going to lose your friendship over something so silly. Well, okay, yeah, good. Bye. Like, I don't have time for that anymore. Like, I just, right, I don't have time for it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some of it stung. You know, but you just have to think to yourself, oh, who gives two shits?
Yeah. I think you have to get to that place if you want to be successful in anything, yeah, in the creative arts. Because the whole, it's all rejection.
Oh, yeah.
It's in your business, it's going up for roles and auditioning and being rejected. And we talk
all
about
the time.
That. Yeah. And I mean, in mine, it's, well, I didn't like your podcast, or no, that joke wasn't funny, we're not going to do this bit, or, mm-hmm, you know, there's rejection all the time.
Right.
You know, and there's constant negative feedback when you're running a digital media company or you're involved in a major media outlet, because people on social media can say whatever they want back, mm-hmm, and a good portion of that is just going to be negative.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so you've got to build that mental toughness if you want to get into this industry, because you've got to be self-secured.
Yeah.
You can't be in... Of course, we all have our insecurities.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you've got to be able to lock that down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's so true. Oh, why are there so many trolls out there?
listen, I appreciate a good troll. But they have their place, you know, yeah, what I mean? Like, you right don't have to be a dick. Like, we've built a big part of our success is memes and trolling each other and inside jokes and all that. But, like, if you're being teased by us, it's because we care about you.
Yes.
You know, if we're making jokes about you, it's because you're part of the club.
Right.
You know, but at the end of the day, like, somebody came to me and said, hey, I want to post this thing about this, like, libertarian movement person. And I just said, I'm not going to post that. Like, that's mean. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know that guy. I don't know anything about him. I'm not going to take that cheap shot and use our platform to knock him down for such a cheap, dumb reason.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if you come onto my page and you troll me, then I will be mean to you. But, like, I'm not going to go out and seek out somebody and go, you know, like, I say negative things about Donald Trump, but that's different.
Right.
You know, he's a massively public figure. But you can't just be a dick.
Right. I know. That's so true. When did you, well, I mean, I guess you've kind of answered this, but, you know, having a thick skin, because, mm-hmm, like, for instance, God, when I first started modeling and I would do pictures, so many people that I didn't know, like, the photographer would post a picture and they'd be like, oh God, she needs to lose like 15 pounds.
Ugh.
Well, I can't lose 15 pounds. Like, right, you know what I mean? I really don't think I could lose 15 pounds. And so it's like, I don't know. Right. It's just like getting that thick skin and then being like, well, okay, whatever. Who knows what you look like behind your computer screen? So, like, how long, right, did it take you to get that thick skin?
Still working on it.
Oh. So when someone says your podcast sucks, are you like, forget it? Or
I don't, because to me, I know it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Like, if you had said that a year ago, I probably would have listened. But now I know, like, we have proof of concept.
Yeah.
And so I think for me, it just takes confidence. It takes, I'm an experiential learner. I have to experience things and learn it. And I have a thick head. And so it takes me a few times for me to get it. You know, and if somebody were to say something about something that I'm feeling insecure about, it might affect me.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if somebody says your podcast sucks, or if we get a bad review on iTunes, it doesn't bother me, because I know for every one person that says something negative, I can go and talk to the 20 people, yeah, that, you know. So
right,
but it's taken me a long time. I think anything that I put my passion towards, like, if I've decided that I'm going to spend my time on something or someone, I'm going to give it my all. Mm-hmm. I'm a 100%er, and I will go full, you know, and It's been a problem with dating. some women are like, I don't need 100% of you. Back off. But I'm like, no, we're doing this. But it's, I'm just one of those people that, like, if I'm going to devote myself to it, I'm going to give it my all. And if I mess up, I take it very hard.
Yeah.
Because there is no room for error. I want to be perfect.
Okay.
And I've had to learn that I'm not perfect, that I can't be perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to say things that hurt people's feelings. I'm going to put out a bad show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make mistakes at work, you know, and, not to beat myself up over that stuff. So for me, it's less about what other people say to me and their impression of me. It's more about my performance. And did I think I wake up every day, like the Colts coach, Chuck Pagano, uh-huh. said something recently that I thought was the best career advice, the best life advice.
Ooh.
Everybody's on a 1-day contract. And I think every day you should wake up and you should go to bed mentally, physically exhausted because you've given everything your all. Now, obviously, you have rest days and you got to take care of yourself and do that kind of stuff. But generally, when I wake up, I hit the ground running, and my goal is to give my all to everything I am involved with that day.
Yeah.
And that's why I've just learned I have to.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that if I didn't do that, then I wasn't going to be successful because I'm not the most talented. I'm not the best looking. I'm not the smartest. But if I have a good enough combination of things, that if I just work hard enough,
yeah.
and get enough experience, then I can rise to the top of any industry reasonably right. that I want in entertainment.
Yeah. So I know you just said, you know, oh, I'm not the best, I'm not the smartest, blah, blah, blah. But you are obviously very talented and you do have like a good fan base.
Well,
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So have you ever come across someone, male or female, that you knew they were using you to get somewhere?
100%. Happens every day. Every day my inbox is full of, hey, I want to bring you in on this opportunity. Or, you know, as Greg says all the time, like, how do I get you to use your knowledge for free?
Uh-huh.
When you work in information work, it is very difficult to, you, I learned this from Paul Poteet, who is a good friend of mine. He's a weatherman here in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And he said, my voice is my business. And I can choose to use my voice and my time for free if I want, but when people expect me to do that for free, they're not paying for the years of talent, knowledge, experience that I put in to learn these things.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when you work in digital, a lot of people just don't know how to do social media. They uh-huh. don't know how to do branding and marketing. They don't know how to do podcasting.
Right.
And they expect that if they take you out for lunch, then you will give them your 13 years of knowledge. You know?
Interesting.
And so I don't mind talking to people, and I do a lot of consulting and conversations and talking to people for free just because I love to help people. But at the same time, I want to help people who are genuine, and I can spot the people who aren't.
That was my next question.
You can tell the person who is not genuine, and I don't know how to explain it. You could just can tell
mm-hmm.
because there's certain phrases
okay.
that they use. That,
like what? What's a phrase?
It depends on the business. A lot of times, like if the pitch is way too prepared. Okay, here's a really telltale sign. If somebody is insecure about asking you for help, if they go, hey man, I know that you don't have time for this and blah, 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 then you go, oh, okay, this person like doesn't expect you to help them. And if the person is like has an expectation that you're going to help me because blah, 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 like that person is usually like full of shit.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, that's just like a realness thing. And like it's just an appreciation thing. Like if you I'm not, maybe insecure is the wrong way, but if like you're very appreciative of me asking you to come be on this podcast for no money. And I find that to be like ridiculous. Like, no, you're helping me. Like, thank you. You don't have to, you know, like, I don't know. So like, to me, that's a sign of a genuineness, you know, whereas somebody who's like, I'm going to come on your podcast, let me know when.
Oh my gosh, well, this is so much fun and I will continue to do podcasts if you want me to, so thank you.
Yeah, so...
How do you respond to these people? Like the ones that you can tell are totally fake?
It depends on how insulting they are. Because if you're super insulting, I just won't respond.
Okay.
If you're,
and then they see that you've seen it,
yes.
And they're like, "Why isn't he responding?"
If you're the highest level of insulting, I will write no thanks. I will be real shitty.
No thanks.
Yes, but most of the time, I just say, "Hey, I appreciate it. I'm just very busy with a lot of projects. I would love to help you, but I can't." I just try to be as nice as possible because, like, at the end of the day, like shitting on people doesn't get you anywhere.
No,
like just. You know, telling, even if you look at a person, you know, you're never going to ever want to have a conversation with them, let alone share a project with them. Like being mean to them does you no good.
No, of course not.
You know, and I've seen with people, and I watched Rupert from Survivor in 2012, have 7,000 to 8,000 people come from his booth at the state fair. And Rupert is the nicest human being alive after you.
Oh,
and
you're so sweet.
He is humbled every time somebody, he can't believe that somebody wants to take their time to walk up and get a photo with him.
Uh-huh.
And sign an autograph and like say these nice things about how much he means to them.
Right.
Like he's so appreciative of the people that are fans of his. And that's been a big lesson for me, but also like I would stand there and people would turn and walk away from him and I'd hear them go, that guy was such a dick.
On like, Survivor?
No, just in that meeting.
Oh, okay.
And I'm sitting there going, Rupert has, I have seen Rupert interact with 10,000 people.
Uh-huh.
I've never seen him be a dick to anyone because there is nothing about Rupert that is dickish.
Yeah.
He's a genuinely nice human being. And so I learned in that moment that it doesn't matter how hard you try to please people. It doesn't matter how hard you try. If you are at a certain level of success, people just, they want to call you an asshole.
Yeah.
It's like they've got some inside information that Rupert from Survivor's a dick.
Right.
You know, and they met him this one time and he was so mean. But they don't realize, well, maybe that guy was having a bad day that day.
Oh, my God. My aunt, uncle, and I were just talking about this out at dinner the other night, how, you know, my aunt's like, the older I get, and she's not even, you know, she's not old.
Sure.
The older I get, the more, you know, I just realize that everyone has something going on.
Right.
It doesn't matter how big or small, but if someone's like mean to you, cuts you off, maybe they're rushing to the hospital.
Yeah.
You don't know. And it's so true. Like, it's such a great thing to remember that you truly don't know.
Yeah. You don't know what struggle somebody has.
Yeah.
You know, and so it just... I try to be as nice to people as possible, and then you hear through the grapevine that this person thinks you're a dick, and you just go, well, that's on them. Like, you don't know that person may be dealing with, it's you know, and maybe I was a dick, because trust me, I can be a dick. I can be...
I can't see it.
I can be a little punchy. So, no, I think it's, you know, it's what it is, but... Yeah, I mean, I'm genuinely happy to take questions and help people, and especially about podcasting, because I do know a lot about it and people are interested in it, and people are just genuine, you know, like people want to be connected to the projects that they like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see people want to be connected to the people that work at my day job because they love it. They enjoy it. It's a part of their routine. They're their friends by proxy.
Yeah.
Like that's an awesome gift that the audience gives to people. The people that listen to We Are Libertarians and that are listening to this, like I am deeply appreciative that people have found our voice and across all of our shows something that they want to spend their time on. Like that is a gift, and so I want, if somebody's going to take the time to even reach out beyond just listening, like I don't want to be mean to them, you know. And so, but I also have a lot going on. I get a ton of messages, and so sometimes you have very limited time to respond,
right?
And so you're very short, and so I'm sure sometimes people are just like, yeah, he's blown me off, you know. And I've heard, I'm like, no, I really wasn't trying to blow you off. I was just like in the middle of 15.
Of course,
yeah. So, but yeah, it's But yeah, you do appreciate, and you can tell the people who are dicks and who aren't, and it's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
Period.
Yes.
Oh, well, and that's interesting. All right. What, I mean, have you ever just, like, point blank said, why would you ever ask me this? Like, I would never help you. you've never had someone like, nice. Okay.
I thought it, but I'm too nice.
So no one that's ever been like mean to you in real life has ever asked you for help and you haven't been like, what?
Yes. Yes, they have. And I help them because
you're so nice.
Because like when I worked at one job and I would say, hey, you know, we're not getting support. Can you give us support? And it was their job to give us support. We were told, no, you're not worth our time. We're putting it into this other thing.
Oh my gosh.
Well, that person was later let go and came to me looking for help in his career.
Oh, the table's empty.
Exactly. And I just, I said, you know, I had the lunch and I just said, here's who you should talk to. Go talk to this person, that person. But I didn't bend over backwards or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it just is. Like, I'd feel bad saying, because, like, even though that person was incredibly unhelpful to me at a point in my life where I needed help,
yeah,
I then look at it empathetically and go, well, now the tables have turned and this person is hurting and struggling, and so I'll help them, you know? And that's where, like, I have a team of friends who are like,
a team of friends. I like that.
Like, I'm going to be nice to this person, should I? And they go, absolutely not. Like, Greg is like, you will not, you need to block this girl you dated. She is horrible to
right.
me. Like, and so I just have started over the last couple of years to go, I'm going to listen to these people who see it from a different perspective,
yeah.
who have my best interest at heart, no matter what.
Yes.
And I'm going to block her, or I'm going to not take this meeting, or I'm going to do that, you know? So, because my inclination is, oh, I want them to like me, and they were so mean to me, so maybe if I do this, then they'll like me. You know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. A little off topic, but along the same lines, do you find a lot of women being like, ooh, someone on air, someone who maybe can like, oh, he knows so-and-so and they know so-and-so and hi, Chris Spangle.
No. No. Yeah, there are times where it's, you can tell, I don't know, it's, you can always tell who's interested in you for what reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that the women who are interested in me, even though they found me through my day job or through this, like, they're interested in me because they like my personality. They're not interested in ulterior motives.
Yeah, good.
So, but there have been, you know, when you have proximity to, you know, people, you do get, hey, can you put the word in for me?
Uh-huh.
Or I want to. There's only been one woman that I dated who was using me to get on the air.
Oh, wow.
And
you didn't know that at the time?
I didn't know that at the time, but it became very evident. And that's really like, I stopped dating and I really haven't started. It's been almost a year because it was just like, man, I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, totally,
like,
understandable.
So where it's just easier to focus on what you're doing in yourself. And then at the right time, somebody will come along that,
yeah,
you know, is the right fit. But that was just a really gross person. Very cute person, very not like physically gross,
yeah,
but like just gross once you realize that they were just trying to get a position out of
right.
you. Right.
Oh, yeah, that's
and you're
sad.
Just like, ugh.
Mm-hmm. Right. Maybe this is a little different too, but you, for your day job, you work early in the morning, right?
I work a 9-to-5 shift now.
Oh, you do? Okay.
But I used to work early.
The early shift. Okay, because I was going to say, like, for acting, sometimes it's easier to date someone who, you know, is in theater or whatever, because if you have to, like, you know, kiss someone or whatever, it's not cheating to them because it's your job and, like, they know, whereas someone outside of it might not see it that way. Like, is there anything like that in radio? Like, is it easier if you work, you know, the 3 to 5 a.m. shift or whatever, not 5 a.m., but you know what I mean? Is it easier to date someone who is, like, knows what the deal is, or does it not really apply?
It is easier when you date someone in the creative arts because they understand the mentality. Okay, when you date what I would call a normie, they can't distinguish between
normie,
the character that you play online or on your podcasts, and what, like, there's a lot of concern about what people will think of them, what people will think of you. And when you date someone in the creative arts, they go, I get what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, I get that's a, you know, that if you're saying this, but because they're able to understand the distinction between the real you and the person that they're, that you present to the outer world.
Okay.
So I do think it's easier. I mean, I've not really found anybody, but
in the arts?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just don't look very hard. So, you know, so.
Hmm. All right.
What next?
What next? Yeah.
You're doing a great job.
Oh, thank you.
You've been so nervous, but you're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you. Yeah, see, now these are when listeners are going to be like, well, we'll come back in a minute when she knows what to ask next.
You're doing fine. So you, are you, like, how nervous are you to quit your job?
I'm not nervous. Well, no, you know what? I think I can truly say I'm not, because I know that this is the only way for me to extend the career further. You know what I mean? And honestly, I'm just ready for something new. Again, I have no beef whatsoever. That's the longest pillow in the world.
I just built a wall between her and I. I'm in Emily's bed. And
which sounds so scandalous.
I know, and I just put the big pillow between the two of us. Yes. Like a true libertarian male. Like, hey, I'm in a bed with a pretty girl. Let me make sure she can't get to me.
Oh, hilarious. I don't remember what I was talking about. Oh yeah. Oh my god, okay. So no, now I forgot.
Stop blushing.
I know, I'm so sorry. I blush easily.
You're quitting your job, and are you nervous?
No, oh yeah, because as much as I love that job, and like I said before, they've been so supportive, and they've truly tried to give me all the time off that I need, which is hard for two surgeons to be like, oh, sure, let me just change the surgery around. Like, it's super hard to do that. So I've been very thankful for them, you know, and they are very supportive. But again, it's not what I wanted to do forever. You know, it wasn't my vocation. Like, this is what I really want to do. So no, I think before I had the TV show, yeah, I probably would have been, because I wouldn't have gotten, it's hard to make money doing indie movie, you know what I mean? You still make money, but not, you know, anything you can really live off of. So if you were to ask me, you know, even a couple months ago before I got the TV show, I would have been terrified, but it's something you just kind of have to swallow and then leap.
How do you deal with the fear?
I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I like it during the day. I don't like it at night when I'm laying in bed wide awake. You know what I mean? Like, during the day, it's like, oh, it's fine. It's exciting. Like, you never know what's going to happen. And then you lay in bed at night and all the worst thoughts come out. You know, and you're like, oh my God.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's fine. It's just part of it, I think. And I think that helps you when you conquer that fear and you go on to, you know, then you do what you set out to do, and then, you know, it's all worth it in the end. So,
well, we do a stage show, and it's something that I thought, oh, I'll never be able to get on stage and do stand-up comedy. And I don't think that I do stand-up, but it's something that I'd always wanted to do until the last couple of years. But I enjoy when we get up on stage at Morty's and do the live show. And when I go out in public speak, like, there's a certain amount of fear, and that fear is necessary. Like, I think if you're a performer of any kind, you have to have some fear, because that adrenaline that you get is going to make you, like, maybe the closest that most people have is like karaoke. I love to sing karaoke.
There you go. That's
but it's very nerve-wracking when you get up to sing karaoke and you're going to look like an idiot in front of your friends.
Yeah.
And you get that little fear, and then you start singing and you're just like, oh man, I nailed it.
Right.
And it's because you had that little extra push.
Then it's so much fun. You just want to put in another song. Yes. Put in another song.
Yeah. And I think it's that because so much of entertainment is amping up your personality, and that extra jolt of adrenaline just takes you to a different place. Yeah.
Did you know that I was in the circus?
No, I didn't.
If you look across the room,
I don't see your beard at all. That's amazing.
Well, I'm, you know, shaved. New times, new Emily. So the Walundas, for anyone that knows the famous flying Walundas.
Amazing.
Yes, so I tightrope walked in the circus, and I did the sway pole. And when I was living in New York City at the time, and I was just over New York City, right? Like, wanted to change. And like a normal person, I Googled circus jobs and came across like this wire walking position. So I have no circus experience, right? Theater theater experience, like performance experience.
Right.
So I wrote them like this passionate letter about why I wanted to join their circus. Yeah, yeah. Long story short, they're like, sure, you know, we're based out of Sarasota. Come on down. We'll train you, and we, you know, we have shows coming up, whatever. So I subleased my apartment. I took my dog.
Right.
Went back home to my hometown of near Buffalo, and, you know, packed a couple of bags and drove out, got my car, drove out to Florida. But what I didn't tell these fine people was that I was terrified of heights. Right?
Oh my gosh.
Because they wouldn't have given me the job if I was like, hey, I want a tightrope walk, but, you know, I'm terrified of heights. But along that line, like, of fear, it's like, you know, you first get out there and it's like, okay, Emily, climb that sway pole, which is 80 feet in the air and it sways back and forth 20 feet, right? It's like, gulp.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, but then it's like that fear also is like the each rung you climb, it's like, oh my God, this is terrifying, but look how much further I'm getting. Like, I never thought I'd be this far up in my life.
Right.
But here I am now at the very top swaying around. You know, you do it 20 times, you get used to it, and it's like, oh my God, this is so much fun.
Right.
You know, so same with like the tightrope.
Did you do it for a career? Like, how long did you do it?
I didn't do it for that long. It's funny, my grandparents have a place in Punta Gorda, which is like an hour from where the circus community was, and they would come, like, watch me practice, take me out to lunch, and be like, we'll give you any amount of money right now if you just quit the circus. And I'd be like, no, I'd love it. But, like, the Willendas are famous for not using nets, right?
Right.
So, like, we never had a net. I learned with no net. And I think my, you know, everyone in my family, again, such sort of supportive parents, they're like, why are you leaving your job in New York City to join
the circus?
But they're like, okay, Emily, if you want to.
It's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I didn't do it for that long. Just because of just family things that had happened, I left. Yeah, so let that fear just drive you.
Yeah. And I, once you get to a point where you've like, you get used to it and you get to accustomed to it, and then, like, all of a sudden after years, you're doing things that everybody goes, you're nuts. This can't be done.
Yeah.
But you know, you have the confidence that these things can be done, that because you have the proof, you have the experience, you know. And I've just learned that I don't want to wake up and I don't want to be around people that disrespect me. I don't want to be in positions where I'm not growing or I'm not being challenged. Like, I want to wake up every day and be passionate about what I do because I can.
Yes.
And I think so many people just settle for less. They settle.
Settling, yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't ever want to have a suburban life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to me, the idea that, like, and I say this now, but who knows? But, like, you go, I look at people who just wake up every day, they go to an insurance business, sit in a cubicle, they go home, they play video games, they go to bed. You know, they have a kid, they just, like, there's no excitement, they're miserable, and they're just like, it's just like, what do you want to do?
Yeah, one life.
Just do it.
I know, it's so cliche.
Right.
We have one life to live. It's so cliche, right. But it's so true, though.
Right. Like, I would erase video games from the planet. I think it's the most destructive force for men, especially. Like, they waste so much time on it.
Let me tell you a quick story. I'm going to interject here. When I was in college, some of my greatest friends were Bob, Nick, and Kyle, right?
Uh-huh.
Three of my greatest friends. Most of us went to the same high school, and then we went to college together, whatever.
Right.
I remember me and our friend Mo, Maureen, we'd call her Mo, we'd walk into the room and be like, hey guys, it's a beautiful day outside, like, let's go down by the creek or something. And they'd be like, hang on, we're playing Halo.
Right.
I remember I despised Halo so much when I was in college because, yeah, it just took my friends away. I was like, where are all my friends? And I would always use the excuse, like, well, not the excuse, but I always think about my oldest sister, Molly. When she was in high school and in college, like, her friends were doing the most fun, random, like, things. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do those things too when I'm in college. And then my friends were playing Halo.
Right. And so then fast forward 10 years later, and those guys are still just, like, playing Halo, you know? And to me, it's just such a waste of a life, you know? If you've got the time and you've got the energy, like, it's somebody who doesn't have kids, who doesn't have a wife anymore, who, like, who... I don't have many responsibilities, and I've figured out what my passion is,
mm-hmm.
and I've collected people who share the same passion, and, you know, it feels, sometimes you go, I'm not an expert. I deal with the imposter syndrome all the time. Like, who am I to be an expert in X? who am I to show up and pretend to be an authority at X?
Right.
And you need to go out and have people say, no, you're okay, you're right. Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, you rocked that. You right. did this. Like, I recently did an interview on MarTech, MARTECH, where I talked about podcasting, and I killed it. They were like blown away, and they learned a bunch of things, and it was just like,
they should be blown away.
Yeah,
you're amazing.
Well, thank you. It's just like that. I walked away going, oh, I felt like I can't do this, or I don't have this, or I blah 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 blah. And then I was able to just share a little bit of what I do, and like, even if you think that you're not good enough, even if you think that you're an imposter, and that everybody's going to figure out what a fraud you are, you still have to go through with it.
Yeah.
Because you will probably realize, I'm not. You know, I have these legitimate things. And I think that it doesn't, so many people let that fear of looking like a fraud stop them in any situation.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want to ask someone out. They don't want to pursue a job opportunity. They don't want to do this thing that will make their kids better. They don't want to make their marriage better by going to therapy.
Right.
You know, like, there's always a reason you shouldn't do anything, but there's always that resistance. And The War of Art is a great book by Stephen Pressfield that talks
What is it?
The War of Art.
The War of Art. Okay.
Yes. And Stephen Pressfield is a great author who has written several books about the process of creating art and the process of creating, and talks about the concept of resistance. It's that procrastination that keeps you from doing that thing that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're somebody who I admire because you said, I feel that, but I'm going to produce my own thing. I'm going to spend the money to produce this. I'm going
Hold
to
your breath.
Write this. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to quit my job to go do this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a million thoughts in your head that tell you none of those things are a good idea.
Yeah.
But you do it anyways, you know, and the creative process is blasting past the notion that you look stupid because you can't pronounce blasting, you know, like, you know, and just allowing yourself to be authentic and do what you want to do and be confident in who you are.
Right. I mean, and also I just think like, all these experiences, like there's so much to do, you know what I mean? And so like, do I regret going to the circus and leaving my job in New York City? Absolutely not, because I can look back on it and be like, I lived next to the Mole Man, who was awesome. You know what I mean? Like,
did you date the Mole Man?
I know, I didn't date the Mole Man. He was the nicest guy though in the entire world. He truly was. He was so sweet. But you know, like, and I have all those experiences from that, right? And I can say, oh yeah, I was in the circus, or like, you know, oh, I'm making this movie, you know, blah blah blah. Like, what? You know, I don't know. I love all these experiences, even if it's something like karaoke.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that is a fun experience. Like, I don't know. I'm just all about the experiences. I say do it. Again, it's cliche, but
yeah.
I mean, what if you weren't here tomorrow? How sad, right?
Right.
Do it.
Those highlights are what define you at the end of your life. It's the things that society, a lot of the highlights are do things that society tells you you're not supposed to do. Like, to me, the idea that cursing is not allowed. Like, society says that these words are bad. Okay, well, question why.
Right.
Why are they bad?
Oh,
why
that's
is
so funny.
Why is fuck a bad word? Like,
right.
To me, it doesn't. That's stupid. Like,
mm-hmm.
We just collectively decided arbitrarily that these are things that we're not supposed to do. Like, that's dumb. Those are the things that, like, there's so much pressure for people to keep you in line.
Yeah.
There's so much social pressure for you to be, and a lot of times it's controlling people who want you to be like them.
Yeah.
Because their reality is that they need to control you because you're an actor in their play, and they need predictability out of you. And if you're unpredictable and running off to the circus, then that's a danger to them
yeah.
and their security.
Right.
And so that is another form of living your life for other people. That
yeah.
You've just got to get that out of your life.
Right.
You just like, you got to go, listen, I'm going to be me and you're going to be with me, or
mm-hmm.
you're not going to be with me. This is me. And if you don't like it, we can part. It's
yeah,
fine.
I know. So here's a funny story about swearing.
Okay.
So growing up, before my parents divorced, my dad's a minister, right?
Mm-hmm.
He lives in Harrisburg now. He's
PK. This is a lot of things
and
make sense
mom,
about Emily
my
now.
My mom's a teacher too. I was a PK and a TK. I got it from both ends.
That's
so,
what she said.
Right. I guess we have to get one of those in every time, right? Did we have one the last time? So my dad, like, super progressive liberal minister, right? Like, super proud of him. My mom is a Spanish and chemistry teacher. Like, she's super smart. But growing up with, you know, my siblings, we weren't allowed to swear. And I remember my cousins, Allie and Jenny, could say ass and piss. And we're like, but Allie and Jenny can say it. And, like, my parents are like, absolutely not. So, like, all growing up, we couldn't swear, right? So my mom remarried my high school basketball coach and history teacher, whose last name is also Sweet. How ironic.
Hilarious.
Yes, and I love him so much. But he's like, you know, he was like, he's not rough around the edges, but like, if you were to look at him, he'd be like a little intimidated, scared of him, right? Like, he's like an intimidating kind of a guy.
Yeah.
But he's like such a teddy bear. And so I remember, like, coming home on holidays now, my mom will drop something and she'll be like, shit. And my brother and I would be like, ooh, mom. She's like, oh, stop. You know what I mean? Like, because now, yeah, it's like she, you know, she understands, like, oh, yeah, I guess these words are fine. Like,
yeah.
You know, now we swear in front of my mom all the time. And bless her soul, she just, oh, yes, Emily, that's horrible. Or like whatever it is. You know, she's
wanting
a
to correct you, probably.
Probably. But I mean, then she says, shit. Like, those are her words, shit and damn. It's hilarious.
She seems like, so where do they live? Where does she live?
They live near Buffalo.
Okay. Uh-huh. All right. So, yeah, like, East Coast moms. Yeah. Very, very cute.
Yeah. So that's my swearing story.
I don't know why, but I have, like, this mental image of your mom, like, making pies with an apron and, like, kind of overweight and very, like, doty. She's doting on her children.
Yes and no. My mom is amazing because
bun in her hair.
No bun in her hair. She loves her hair down. She like tiles and wallpapers and like just can fix anything. But then she bakes, you know, Christmas morning. She always makes this egg casserole and, you know, cinnamon buns and all this stuff, right? Like, so I don't know, she's such an amazing woman.
That's cute.
Yeah,
very cute.
Hi, mom. Yeah.
Well, now that she's listening, I feel sad. I'm sorry I said fuck, ma'am.
You should be more upset that you called her doty and fat.
I didn't call her fat.
I'm just kidding.
Slightly overweight.
I'm
like
just kidding.
Like a good month. And doty is doting on her.
I know.
Children.
No,
that's a very
I
good,
know
that's
I know
good quality.
I know.
So what other questions do you have?
Are you ready to move on and like do this?
I'm already doing it.
Well, you know I know, I mean? But like, are you ready to leave? Maybe you're like, do you feel like you're at that point?
I'm not at that point yet.
What's going to take you to be at that point?
I feel like I have to have confidence in my skills first. I mean, I have to have a revenue source. Like, We Are Libertarians is covering its profit, but it's certainly not at any point that any person could make any money off of it.
Okay.
So there has to be a long period of time where I can make sure that We Are Libertarians makes money.
Mm-hmm.
First, I have to finish out a few skills. There's a few things that I feel like I need to personally do that I need to do these things to have the confidence in my skills and feel like I achieved certain things. Uh-huh. I feel like I'm not there yet in those things. Secondly, We Are Libertarians has to, not just the podcast, but the entire brand has to make money. Mm-hmm. and make money consistently.
Okay.
And it has to prove its value. Now, if I were devoting 40 hours a week or more, I mean, I'd never stop at 40 hours a week regardless, but
right. The
amount of things that we could do would be so monumental.
Yeah.
So much more than we do. And instead of it being my hobby. So that also will take income. That will take capital.
Mm-hmm.
I'll also have to get a few more pieces of equipment.
Okay.
Big pieces of equipment like computers and cameras and stuff like that. So I'm just not at a point financially where I could do it. I think that it certainly is a proven concept that if we continue down the path we're going, it can monetize itself to a point where I and several other people can eventually make a living at it.
Yeah.
Because that's the goal, is to build something that is like Twit, for instance, Leo Laporte's network, where you've got this brand or you know, tested by the the Mythbusters guy.
Yeah.
Or like where I work at my day job, you know, where it starts off as this one little thing, and then it turns into this empire, yeah. You know? And so I don't think I'm there quite yet. But I think we're on the right path. We're definitely at a point where I know for a fact, based on my experiences at past jobs, that this is something that will make money.
Yeah.
That this is something that can sustain careers. So it's just about moving in a certain direction. So eventually that can happen,
mm-hmm.
You know? So this is eventually what I want to do, and this is eventually where I want to go. And it's, you know, will it make me a millionaire? I don't think so, but that's not the goal. I don't care about that kind of stuff. Will it allow me to wake up every day and give people something that they value, and then that in turn gives me a good feeling about waking up every day and doing more?
Yeah.
Absolutely. It already does.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. That's all I got.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Emily. You are a great interviewer.
Oh, thanks.
It's a great conversation.
I'll get better.
Yeah. So follow Emily Sweet at It's Emily Sweet on Instagram, Facebook. You can find her on Facebook somewhere. Snapchat, you're on. You can go see some fire pictures of you doing a photo shoot today.
Yeah. That's not it. I need to make an at It's Emily Sweet Snapchat because I don't really, I mean, well... Tune in next time and I'll have Snapchat for you guys.
All right, yeah. So you can follow me at C Spangle on Snapchat and we'll plug you there. So, but all right, very good. So thanks so much, Emily, for being a part of this.
Thanks for having me on.
Looking forward to having you be my co-host. We're going to interview... I've been thinking about... I looked back at the people that I've interviewed for this and they're all in the creative arts. They're all creative people who are making the stuff that you love and enjoy. And... So I've been thinking about making that the exclusive, the thing that we talk about. And when I interviewed Emily, the second I turned off the mics, I was like, "Hey, do you want to be my co-host?" Because I've been
like, yes!
I was like looking for somebody to co-host with me. Because and I was just like, "Oh, this person is fantastic." So thank you so much for coming on as my co-host.
Of course.
Welcome to the We Are Libertarians family.
Yes, I'm so excited. Thank you.
Can't wait to make memes of you.
Oh, boy. All the memes. They're coming.
Although you as Barbie already was... That's meme material, okay?
Oh, dear.
The photo shoot of you as Barbie that is on your Facebook, so...
And Instagram.
Yes, and Instagram at Emily Sweet. It's Emily Sweet. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time here on The Chris Spangle Show.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.